Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another special episode of Talk Eastern Europe's continuing coverage of the war in Ukraine. My name is Adam Reichert. I am the editor-in-chief of New Eastern Europe and one of the co-hosts of Talk Eastern Europe. In this episode, I sit down with Vera Konstantinova, who is a Ukrainian political scientist, expert in international relations, and commentator in Ukrainian media. And she has also previously worked as a foreign relations specialist for Ukraine's parliament, Verkhovna Rada. In our discussion today, we talk about looking at how life is in Kyiv today after over 80 days of war. And we also look at the situation elsewhere in the country, including in Kherson and Mariupol. I also ask Vera for her opinion and reactions, as well as Ukrainians' reactions to the face-saving idea that was recently promoted by Macron and others. And lastly, we talk about the negotiation process that is taking place. This interview was recorded on Monday, May 16th, so it's possible a few of the details are already outdated as the situation is constantly moving quickly. However, Vera's input and discussions are very interesting, and I invite you now to listen to our discussion. Okay, hello, Vera, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello, Adam. Glad to be with you today.
So we are now 80 days into Russia's unprovoked mass invasion of Ukraine. And it appears that the first phase has more or less ended with Russia's withdrawal from Kyiv and the northern regions. But I'm really curious. I mean, you've been in Kyiv this whole time, as far as I understand. How does society function? How does life look like right now in Kyiv today?
Thank you, Adam, for this question. First of all, I would like to express gratitude for all support from all our partners, in particular from Polish friends, brothers and sisters. To be honest, it's difficult to reflect on everything we have already gone through, but at the same time, first of all, our society, the resistance of our society right now is much more higher than, I guess, before February 24th. But at the same time, we just, I guess that's a period of time when people, those who moved from Kyiv region, they have already returned to their homes. And maybe that's first step to estimate everything that was done since February 24th, I mean from the governmental perspective, yes, life under the military aggression of the foreign state, I mean Russia, it's rather stressful. But at the same time, before February 24th, many experts, not only in Ukraine, but also from European countries, they have said that Ukrainians are rather resistible for everything that could be happened. But at the same time, really, it's rather, it's impressive for me when you saw people who try to help. It's like when Maidan period, you feel that you are part of something bigger, you're part of your society, and you are ready to contribute to the efforts of civil activists, volunteers, to help our army to be effective on the battlefield.
Yes, indeed. I do have this sense that it's something that I refer to as the Maidan mentality that is in the Ukrainian society. And in fact, I had a discussion with Georgi Kasyanov, who's a Ukrainian historian, last week. And he mentioned that actually throughout history, there is this kind of horizontal mobilization in society that you can find in Ukraine. So I think this is a continuation, actually, of that to see.
Yes, definitely. Yes. And you, to be honest, I would say that it's rather interesting because it's not about the organizational from the governmental institution. It's about us. That's why people try to self-organize, try to do the job, try to be effective mm-hmm. on their fronts. And that's maybe the secret of the well-doing resistance of the society. But at the same time, from psychological perspective, definitely those who stayed in Kyiv region, it was rather stressful for them, but they become much more stronger. Mm-hmm. But those who have moved they contribute a lot, organizing different events, paying attention to the situation, spreading the truth about the Russian aggression, about the Russian war crimes in Ukraine. That's not about Ukrainians who stayed in Ukraine, but it's about the society in the whole.
Yeah.
Definitely, diaspora also contributed to the all efforts of the resistance of Ukraine. That's why for me, I would say that hope that since February 24th, everything that could unite us, this moments was rather effective.
Mm-hmm.
And from perspective of the person who are from eastern part of Ukraine, we don't have any aspects that could dissolute us, but we have a lot to unite for.
Mm-hmm.
That's why for me, definitely from perspective of Ukrainian who loves its country, I guess that's the main. A period, main moment in our history, not only from modern history, but I guess from the centuries perspective,
mm-hmm.
This is a great moment for our nation to understand that we could do everything. We could become a very great nation. We are defenders of the unity. We are defenders of the values, and we are defenders of the democracy. Definitely, we have lost a lot of people, especially civilians, and all the sacrifices, their lives, in order the future generations would live in free, democratic, and strong country.
Yeah, it's absolutely, shocking the amount of people who've already, who've died for this. And especially when we think about that first phase of the war, when Russia was getting closer to Kyiv, and the amount of destruction that it caused. But now things are relatively calmer, I guess, in that part of Ukraine. But what would you say are the biggest challenges for everyday life in Kyiv?
We should understand that war is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because from my perspective, I witnessed people who don't feel that the war is going on. Because
is it easy to kind of forget a little bit for some people?
Sometimes from the psychological perspective,
yeah.
when
yeah.
you have stress,
yeah.
And you permanently within this stress, you try to not to follow
right.
news, not to follow the situation of the fronts, but definitely when it comes to the self-organization, self-help you should be aware of the psychological waves of the war, because some people decided that if you don't hear the bombing alerts, that means that war is ended. Not really. And from the perspective of analysis and everything I have heard from experts, we should be ready to resist until the end of this year. But of course, all efforts they are dedicated to this stopping this war. But taking into account the position of Ukraine's enemy, it's definitely it's a long story. But at the same time, citizens should be ready to live under the aggression, and from not only from psychological perspective, but also economically, financially, people should be ready. And that's why I guess the main idea of living under the aggression, under the, we are still have a martial law. And I think that everything had changed in our everyday life. It's not a normal life as it goes in other countries. But at the same time, I would say that people from different generations, they are much more on the third month of the aggression, full-scale war, they become much more resistant from the from my perspective. And I think that our generation, I mean those who served already in the Ukrainian armed forces, I have heard the story that what is your motivation to sign the contract with the Ukrainian armed forces? The main motivation is that our children should live in peace and democracy. And that's why our generation, elder generations, they are ready to fight as much as it would require it. But hope it would be end soon.
Well, there's no doubt that you're not only fighting for your future generations, but future generations of Europe as well. I'm curious on we can talk a little bit more of the situation elsewhere, because if we look at where the kind of most of the heavy fighting is, I mean, for example, Mariupol or Kherson, they appear to be mostly under Russian control. And I'm curious on your opinion, because some experts and locals that I've been reading have said that Russia plans to annex Kherson as well as Mariupol into the Russian Federation. So not even add them into the, you know, this fake republic. But what do you think would happen then if Russia quickly organizes some sort of annexation of these regions on the southeast of Ukraine into the Russian Federation? What happens after that? What's the next phase then?
If you follow in the situation in these cities, you would see that there is a significant resistance from the local population that they have the understanding that Ukraine would deoccupy these territories. And at the same time, if you pay attention to the Russian perspective, you would see that there were at least two attempts to organize a fake referendum, but both of them had already failed. And that's why they changed their tactics and tried to follow the other path of trying to occupy it and fix it legally within their legislation. But at the same time, our partners and Ukrainian side, we have already declared that there was no recognition of these attempts. And territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine would prevail. And at the same time, I think that even if to pay attention to Mariupol city, According to the Russian propaganda, they have already taken this city at least 100 times. But our military and our forces, they continue their resistance and they continue to defend Ukrainian land. And for them, rather difficult to explain how it could be that they can't occupy the Ukrainian city until the February 24th. It's already 3 months.
Yeah.
That's why it's painful from the propaganda point of view. And of course, paying attention that Mariupol is my native city, it's my hometown. Mm. And in 2014, when the situation deteriorated with the Russian aggression on the east, it was obviously that Mariupol city decided, and citizens of Mariupol, they see themselves in Ukraine, not in Russian Federation, or especially on so-called terroristic organization like LNR or DNR.
Mm-hmm.
And from Kherson perspective, we have a significant movement there, and news that coming from these territories, it's rather impressive because people continue to organize meeting in favor of Ukraine. They try to help Ukrainian side to keep in touch with them. At the same time, of course, it's too dangerous for them.
Yeah.
You should have significant courage and be very brave to survive under the occupation. And that's the other side of the misunderstanding of the Russian Federation authorities, that Ukraine would resist not only from the military perspective, but also on the society level.
Yes, yes.
And that's the key idea, because Mariupol, Kherson, all south cities, Berdyansk, for example, they have a strategic point for Russian Federation, because as you probably know, they're trying to move to the Odessa city and to organize the land corridor for so-called Transnistria region.
Yes. Yep.
That it's temporarily occupied by Russia and it's sovereign territory of Moldova.
Moldova,
yes. And that's why it's a common problem, not only for Ukraine, but also for Moldovan side. And for us, of course, our main port, I guess, Odessa city, it's also under aggression of Russian Federation, and they tried to occupy Odessa also. But at the same time, the third month of the war had shown that Ukrainian army is well trained, well organized, highly motivated, and with the help of our European and American partners, we could resist this aggression for a long time.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good introduction into my next part of the conversation, which is actually looking about the support from the West. But the first question I have to ask, because it's actually related to my previous one, about Russia trying to take land, additional land from Ukraine. We recently found out from an interview that that Ukrainian President Zelensky said, I think it was in Italian TV, that that the French President Macron proposed that Ukraine give up some territory to Russia in order to, as they say, present a face-saving option for Putin. How is the reaction in Ukraine to this information? How is the reaction? I mean, Zelensky, I'm sure he spoke more about it to his audience, to Ukrainians. And what was your reaction when you heard about this?
That's could be if definitely such a suggestion would received by our president, I would say that I'm rather disappointed. Because since 2014, when our partners from Normandy 4 tried to manage the situation with Russia and its aggression, its attempt of the annexation of Ukraine's territory, I would say that it's rather bad idea due to several reasons. First of all, those, I mean, experts who dealing with Russia for a long time, not only in Ukraine, but also in Baltic states, they said that if you would give Russia some kind of piece of consensus, I would say, Russia would request more.
Yes.
The second point, that it's a bad idea due to the inability of the Russian Federation to follow all obligations that this country had taken since dissolution of the Soviet Union in 1991. And the third reason that it's a bad idea, when it comes to the some kind of analysis and prognosis, you would see that if to refer the Putin's Munchen speech in 2007, I guess, when he said that the most important strategy of the 20th century was the dissolution of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And that would mean that for Putin's understanding of the geopolitics, Ukraine shouldn't exist as an independent state, as well as Belarus. And from an analysis, from perspective of experts, it means that politicians in Europe, they didn't do the analysis of the failures, because to be honest, the Russian aggression against the sovereign state, it could be estimated as a failure of the European politics toward Russia. And from perspective of Baltic states, as well as Ukraine, as well as Central European states, that could be avoided. That could be avoided. But at the same time, we are here at this point, and we need to deal with the aggressive politics of Russia since the 90s. And of course, when Ukraine declared that Russia would attack us and would continue this aggressive politics, we said about the hybrid aggression, yes, not only using military, but also in, for example, energy field. Mm-hmm. Nobody in European capitals paid great attention to this. To these concerns. But at the same time, thanks to common position with our Baltic partners, with Poland, with Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, we try to articulate that's a real challenge. Right now, as you see, Russia uses weapon and not only on the battlefield in Ukraine, but also within the energy context. And right now, European states try to manage this situation, try to follow the rules of the third energy package or energy community and energy union. But once more, it could be avoided. And that's why I was very surprised regarding this suggestion from the President Macron to try to give the Putin an option.
Yeah,
he's a war criminal. There is no option. There is no he should be punished according to international justice. And that's why it's rather strange to hear from the European leaders such a suggestion when we talk about the values, we talk about rule of law or democracy.
Yeah, I think we were all very surprised when such a statement came out, if that's really what he said. And at the same time, I mean, for sure, I would add is one thing that I think that Ukraine definitely does not want, but I think that the European Union should also not want is some sort of new Minsk agreements, because we learned how they were only used to manipulate opinion against Ukraine in particular, but they were also used to basically allow Russia to kind of prepare for this phase of the war, because the war really has been going on since at least 2014. But at the same time, there are some negotiation processes, at least that began between Ukraine and Russia. And I just wanted to ask, because I haven't seen any recent news about it. Do you know what the current state of the negotiations are? And in particular, what do you think Ukraine's most important conditions for Ukraine are to get a ceasefire?
First of all, as I know, the diplomatic track is ongoing, and we have exchange of the our soldiers injured in the battle on the battlefield, mm-hmm. and those who captured by the Russian Federation forces. That's I guess, the main reason why we should talk to the enemy. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, regarding the diplomatic solution, it's rather complicated issue right now. And from my perspective, first of all, we have the Azovstal case, we have the Mariupol case, and we, from expert perspective, I don't see the significant progress right now when it comes to the our military blocked in the Azovstal. But at the same time, we hope that this case would resolve. And from perspective of the negotiation process, definitely right now, after everything Ukraine has already go through, and all our citizens witnessed the atrocities and atrocities in Bucha, Hostomel, or Irpin. Mm-hmm. Definitely, it should be a consensus in the society. What should we do with Russia? First of all, as I've heard from different experts, first of all, we should the main principle for negotiations with Russia right now, it's a restoration of territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine. And of course, from the from expert point of view, I would say that not only about the territorial integrity, but also about the compensation of everything that Russia have done to our infrastructure, because they, according to their propaganda, they attacked only military facilities, but at the same time they attacked civilian infrastructure, and of course they should pay for this. I'm totally agree with those who said that all money or compensation wouldn't back people who had died in this undeclared, unprovoked war from Russian side. And that's, I guess, the third idea, because it would be difficult to trust Russians after everything they have done. And it would be difficult to back to the international community and international rules of peaceful coexistence with the states that attacked other states. That's why from international law perspective, we should have some kind of instruments and mechanisms. Because to be honest, I was very upset on the reaction of the key international organizations of everything that's going on in Ukraine. Inability to prevent such atrocities. It's the main component we should deal with after the end of this war. And I guess Ukraine has some kind of understanding that after the in the period of post-war, we would act like a responsible state. Because to be honest, inability of international law to prevent such atrocities, it's not only about Ukraine. I researched such cases of inability in other regions. That's why Ukraine should become the last call in order to prevent the total destruction of the international relations system. But at the same time, if to back to the idea of diplomatic solution, each war ends with a treaty. And of course, I would say that in some time, Ukraine would sign some kind of peace treaty with Russia. But in this...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Of this treaty, we should fix our territorial integrity and sovereignty according to the international recognized borders. We should fix the issue of compensations, and we should fix the I would say sanctions, the cases when sanctions against Russia could be lifted. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, of course, Russian diplomacy works on the issue of sanctions very closely, and they try to manipulate as well the sanctions regimes. And that's why it's important to talk about them, not only energy embargo. Yeah. To be honest, the world has numerous cases of sanctions regimes. I called it sanction playbooks. For example, against Iran, and everything that Russia had done could be punished using the perspective and cases from sanctions regimes against other states. But the main idea: this sanction should be introduced immediately. Mm-hmm. We from Ukraine, we can't wait for 6 months. It's enough period for so-called partners of Russia to organize, to help them avoid the negative impact of this sanction. That's why we shouldn't postpone the introduction of the full package. And that's why it's important to talk about energy embargo. That's why it's important to talk about the technological even embargo and embargo against sanctions against the banking or financial system. It's important to not to talk, but to introduce these sanctions ASAP. From my perspective, that's the only opportunity to stop this war immediately.
Yeah, you mentioned sanctions. I just wanted to ask briefly, what else do you think Ukraine needs right now from its Western partners, from the international community?
We need, I guess, much more weapons, not only defensive, but also offensive, because when it comes to the deoccupation process, we need much more weapons. And at the same time, of course, we need some kind of legal procedures that could be introduced from the European partners or American partners that could permit us to use the money, financial resources of the Russian Federation that had already arrested in Europe or in the United States. And the third component, of course, we still need humanitarian assistance because due to the stressful period for our economy, we need some kind of support for our people. And of course, economic dimension, I guess it's the main part of this construction and architecture of our resistance, because economy does really matter. And our economically support from European states and from international institutions value a lot. And from perspective of analysis, I would say that three components, yes, military, humanitarian, and economy. And of course, political support, we have significant political support that should be transferred to the practical steps. But definitely, once more, I would say that Ukrainians feel this support, I mean, from our European partners and American partners, due to the significant support of our refugees or temporary moved persons, because it's important to feel this support. And by the way, it's interesting to talk about the migration processes, because Ukrainians, I have seen numbers of Ukrainians who backed to Ukraine since February, and Ukrainians, they are not going to be refugees. They want to go home. They want to return home.
Yes.
And that's the main destination of all efforts, to help Ukrainians back home. And to, of course, after the war, we would enter the process of rebuilding everything that was destroyed by the Russian army. But right now, we should focus on totally deoccupation of Ukrainian territories and restoration of our sovereignty.
I have one more question yet. Do you have time?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Pleasure,
So this last weekend, Ukraine won the Eurovision contest. How important would you say that this victory is for Ukraine and the Ukrainian people? And what kind of signal does it send to the rest of the world?
Well, thank you. Thank you for
and congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Yes. If you have seen the official video of this song, winning song, it's very important message to the world that Ukraine is a nation of defenders, and the role of Ukrainian women in resistance and defending our homeland is very significant. Yes, it's important from the cultural point of view, because culture is also the main part of all societies. And by the way, according to the our rules, we give the best marks to our Polish and Lithuanian friends, and it's also the sign that we have the significant political support, and not only on the level of governmental authorities, but also on the people-to-people dimension.
Yes.
And for us, definitely, it's very important to have such such event in Ukraine next year. But of course, there is some kind of security concerns because we should stop the war firstly, and then be ready to organize the Eurovision 2023. And from my perspective, I guess this song and everything that our boys band had shown on the Eurovision stage, that's a story. That's the main story, that Russians wouldn't have an opportunity to rewrite. And everything that they have already done to our society, to Ukrainians, it's fixed in music, it's fixed in our history, it's fixed in the history of the European Union and Eurovision as the context song competition. And for me, I think that in 2016, when we have the Jamala winning, we also have a story. We also have a story of Crimean Tatars. And mm-hmm. right now we have a story of Ukrainians as a whole nation. And Ukraine is a very cultural nation, and we can contribute to the European culture as well. And of course, to analyze the song and all songs that already we won the Eurovision, they have the Ukrainian context, they mm-hmm. have the Ukrainian cultural context. That's why it's important to promote own culture, to be aware of everything that your nation and your history have. Yes. And that's why I guess that's the secret of the winning the this great event. And hope it would help Ukraine to rebuild much more effective and to rebuild its capacities after the war.
Yeah, and also most important, considering the fact that, you know, Vladimir Putin himself denies that Ukraine doesn't exist as a nation and has no culture. And here we see the richness of Ukrainian culture and the story of Ukraine, I think, was also important for European audience to see it. I mean, of course, they know the war is going on, but to see it through the Eurovision contest, I think, was really critical. So congratulations once again for that.
Thank you once again. Thank you. And I hope welcoming all of our European friends in Ukraine next year for this amazing event.
I keep my fingers crossed.
Of course, of course, it would be very safe, and I think that Ukrainian armed forces would do their best to organize this to contribute to the organization of this global event next year. But we need to finish the war. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay, Vera, thank you so much for your insights and for your discussion with me today. I think it was really interesting to hear from you. And of course, you know, as I said earlier, we're doing everything we can to support you. And we know that that Ukrainians are fighting not only for their own freedoms and for the values, but they are also fighting for the rest of us as well. So please stay safe, stay strong, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you. We would, and everything would be okay, I guess. Thank you so much for this inspirational discussion, and see you next time.
Yes. I hope to see you very soon in Ukraine. Exactly.
Thank you.